Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan. This week, we've got Aaron O'Brien, Holly Michelle, and Jin Baum, the Klingon Popwire. Welcome.
Hey!
Nuknech!
Oh, boy. I'm going to be out of my element again.
You think you will? I think zero.
Oh, that's great.
I know bits of phrases. I know Dave knows a little more than I do.
Yeah, nuknech is what do you want? It's the Klingon greeting.
It's the closest to hello you're going to get.
Gotcha.
I like it.
Jen's been on the show and on our YouTube
a
couple times, yeah. And she's coming back and we're going to be talking some more Star Trek Discovery.
It's so good.
I mean, obviously, last episode probably would have been more ideal because it would have had a lot more Klingons. But
that was the original plan.
Yeah, but how is your take on current Discovery right now? Are you into it?
Oh, I'm super into it. Last week was absolutely nuts. I didn't actually get to watch it last week. The night that it dropped, because my husband was out of town and he was like, please wait for me. So I didn't get to watch it until Friday night. And one of my Twitter followers had posted something that night that was like, can you believe that song cue? And she tagged me and Mary Chifo and linked to my Bandcamp page for Shosh, Danzig's mother. And I was like, what just happened?
So I know. Like,
all day Friday, I'm like, oh my God, I can't wait for my husband to get home from this work trip. Oh my God, I can't wait to see what this is all about. And when she like stood in front of the council and was like, call me mother, my face, like I turned and looked at my husband and was like, oh my God.
I know. I think they're taking notes from you.
Oh my gosh. I posted that stuff everywhere and tagged Mary Chifo as much as I could. I was like, God, just retweet one of these. Just one of them.
Please.
I was like, I am going to sell some MP3s. It was just amazing. We translated that song like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like it was something that we knew was coming by any stretch of the imagination.
Sure.
That was just absolutely amazing. I loved it. This whole season so far is just, I'm loving it. I'm absolutely loving it.
Yeah. It's first of all, yeah, the name Mother, as she calls herself, and you have a whole song recorded. I'm surprised they didn't even try to put that in there somehow. They should have asked you at least.
That would have been amazing.
Oh my God. I would have died.
but the thing is, you would have known if they would have asked you, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm such a huge fan of the show. I went on the Star Trek cruise in January and from Star Trek Discovery. They had Mary Chifo and Kenneth Mitchell, nice. Rekha Sharma, and Jason Isaacs.
Nice.
And oh my God, they were just living for it, because this was only maybe like their second big convention, because they did like Star Trek. They did Vegas.
Okay.
But like the Star Trek cruise is, you know, 2,500 people and you're on a boat with them. And oh my, they were just there to party. They had such a good time. You could tell they were having a good time.
That's great.
And yeah, so
Yeah, because I saw pictures and I think some video of you performing there. So that's got to just be so much fun. I've been on cruises before, but not a Star Trek cruise. So
I'm telling you, you have not lived. If you're a Star Trek fan and you get a chance to go on the Star Trek cruise, it is worth every penny, every penny. It is so memorable, and it just, you know, you get in the elevator and you're riding in an elevator with Jonathan Frakes, or wow. You go to dinner and there is Renee Auberjonois and Nana Visitor, and, you know, sitting down and having dinner with their spouses. And there you just walk past Will Wheaton having dinner with his wife. And like, I mean, and because you're all on the same boat, there's really nowhere to go. Right. They're all going to the same restaurants. They're using the same elevators. They're, you know,
yeah. You know,
there's no secret passages to get from one space to the other. They're not using staff passages. They have one on the last couple. I've been on the last two, and they had one restaurant that they sort of partitioned off with some curtains. And so that way, if the celebrities wanted to sort of have a quiet dinner, they could go. They could kind of go and just be uninterrupted and not be in the thick of things. But for the most part, they were there to have a good time too. I mean, yeah, they were working, but I mean, they're clearly there to also just have a really good time.
Right. They're getting paid to be on a cruise with people that like the same kind of things they like.
Right. Well, and they get to, they kind of also get to show a different side of themselves too on the cruise. So mm-hmm. Like Rekha Sharma did a drink and draw, and did yoga one morning, and Mary Chifo led yoga one morning, and Nana Visitor did a wine tasting thing. And yeah, I mean, so you kind of get to see them do things that, and they like do little like song and dance shows on, you know, at night, and they're all so talented. They're such incredibly talented people, not just because of Star Trek, but because of all the things that they did after Star Trek and before Star Trek. And
right.
Mm-hmm. It's really cool.
And they're also just not right. locked behind tables and like having to meet quotas and like trying to get their time's worth out of a convention.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they're stuck on a boat.
You can't escape me.
Yeah, right.
Jonathan Frakes.
Yeah.
I'll be seeing you later by the pool.
You can pee next right. to Jonathan Frakes.
I
step over the partition.
Like one day I just wanted to go and like sit by the pool and read my book. So I went and I sat down in a chair and that was empty. And then a few minutes later, Thomas Dolby was he was the musical guest this year. She blinded me with science.
Yeah. Thomas Dolby. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing. He is
Alien
amazing.
Ate my Buick. Right.
Yeah. he is an incredible guest, and he did his performance was outstanding. And he sat down in the chair beside me. And I mean, I didn't like bother him, but I was just like,
you were a little freaking out a little bit.
But yeah, like I was like, dude, Thomas Dolby just sat down next to me.
We're existing in the same space. Oh my God.
This is super normal. I'm super normal. I'm a super normal person right now.
That's so cool. What a great experience.
That's awesome.
Is there more of those coming up in the future?
Yeah, the next one in 2020 is actually celebrating the 25th anniversary of Voyager. They got Kate Mulgrew.
Oh my God.
Cool.
Everyone's heads explode.
Yeah.
All
oh my God.
And new black people are signing up.
They got Kate Mulgrew. They're getting a whole bunch of the Voyager cast. Ethan Phillips will be there. Robert Duncan O'Neill is coming. Robert Picardo will be there. Who else did they announce? My mind is a blank, but yeah, they have a whole bunch of the Voyager cast coming. And then a bunch of other people. So far they've only announced Wilson Cruz for Discovery. I'm crossing everything that they get Mary Wiseman. If they get Mary Wiseman, like I won't have to go on another Star Trek cruise ever again. Like I'll have Kate Mulgrew and Mary Wiseman on the same cruise, and that's it for me. I don't have to.
That's all you need.
That's like it. So Yeah, well, I'm really looking forward. We weren't even going to go next year, but they actually extended it. It's going to be a 7-day cruise instead of a 6-day cruise. It's $50 a person cheaper because they got a bigger boat. They switched from Norwegian to Royal Caribbean, and it's apparently a Voyager class ship.
Oh, wow. Oh, nice.
But it's cool. The ship just looks absolutely amazing. It's got this insane like interior promenade thing, and like there's an ice rink on it. I don't know. I'm like I said, we weren't going to sign up for next year, and then a bunch of people said they were. Our friends said they wanted to go. And so my husband's like, all right, we're going next year. We are not going in 2021. So
that's
if you
funny.
Want to go on the Star Trek cruise and hang out with me and my husband, you have to go next year. Like,
right. Nice. Yeah.
Well, I won't be able to afford it, sadly.
Aww.
I was going to say, I love Star Trek and my husband does not, but he does love cruises.
Yeah.
Oh, so as long and, as you there's know, booze.
You, that's just it. Like, and you definitely get the spouses on the cruise that are like, you know, I'm here because I, you know, my crazy wife or my crazy husband is a big Star Trek fan, and I'm just gonna hang out in the karaoke bar the whole time.
Right.
Great.
But, oh my God. Oh my gosh! One night, the last night of the cruise, for karaoke, Connor Trinneer ran. He hosted karaoke a couple times, but he hosted it that final night, and somebody found Faith of the Heart in the freaking karaoke book.
Oh my God.
And the entire, like, it's like a good, like, two stories worth, because you can look down into the karaoke bar from the deck above, and, like, everybody is just singing along. And
oh my
it
God.
It was so funny.
And that's so great.
It's a good time, I'm telling you.
That sounds hilarious. Cool. Just so everyone knows, I'm sure most people who are listening do know this because they've listened to our podcast before, but Klingon Pop Warrior, you can find all your stuff at www.klingonpopwarrior.com, and you have your music there, and you all the links are there so that you can download your music and you can hear all that stuff right there.
It's true.
And she also does Extra Life every year, and I've played games with her the last 2 years.
Raised so much. I raised over $2,100 in 2018. I ended up, I was in the top 10 for a really long time for my Children's Miracle Network Hospital here in Chicago. And I got bumped to number 15 by the end of the year. So my goal is to stay in the top 10 in 2019. So I'm definitely going to be doing some really fun stuff this year. And I'm going to be doing some things throughout the year. Some giveaways and things like that is my hope this year, rather than just waiting until like the month or two before. So
not only do you give your talent and music, but you also give your energies to helping young children who are struggling and helping them with their cause.
24 hours of straight video games.
Yeah. It's insane.
24 hours is a long time.
Yeah, we played some Civ 6 last year, and the year before we did Diablo 3.
Yep. Yes. Diablo is good.
What's your favorite to play?
I really do like playing Diablo. One of my favorite games to play, which the actual servers for it, they're not working anymore. I used to love playing Magicka, because the game mechanics for it are like no other game. It's really confusing to cast spells, and there's, and friendly fire is real. And so you can actually kill your teammates. Utter chaos. It's utter chaos. I'm a terrible, terrible spellcaster. I drive my husband crazy, but it made for great watching.
That's hilarious. That's great. That's awesome.
Did you ever play Chippendale Rescue Rangers on the NES? There was friendly fire in that.
Oh my God.
That was super frustrating.
This year, I have to say, I actually got an N64 emulator. And I played some Mario Kart 64, because when I hit $1,800, I gamed dressed as a Klingon Princess Peach. And, I played Mario Kart for a while, and that was actually really funny. I was definitely a terrible driver.
That's great. That's great. Yeah, I you know, there's funny because you were saying like Diablo. I used to play Diablo a long, long time ago. I probably was the first version of it, so I don't know what version you were playing. But also, I played. Oh, it was three? Yeah, that was probably out of my range. So it's like me, it's like Diablo and the maybe the first or second version of Civilization. And then I fell off, you know, that after, you know, the Oregon Trail, you know, that was the ones I dropped off on. So,
oh, man, that would be a really fun game. It'd be fun. I did some running this year. It would be fun to hunt down Oregon Trail emulators.
Yeah, I got to find it. I was looking around.
I hated that game.
Of course you hate it.
You died of dysentery.
You always died of dysentery, but it is kind of funny.
It was just boring to me.
You drowned in the river and then died of dysentery.
I don't have a memory of dying very often. I was just bored. Maybe if I died more, I would have enjoyed it. I don't know.
You might actually like it more now than you did as a kid.
Maybe.
Because I found that I liked it a lot more when I replayed it. About 10 years ago than I did when I was a kid. So yeah,
when you're a kid, you're like, oh, this is educational. This sucks.
Well, yeah, it was exactly. The only thing we were allowed to do in computer class.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, yeah.
That logo.
We played Street Rod or Street Racer, where you had to buy a car and fix it up and race it.
I don't know that one.
Nope, didn't do that one.
Don't know that one. But definitely did Oregon Trail, that's for sure.
But
should we get
Star
into
Trek news?
We didn't actual have Star Trek much.
Yeah.
Well, we talk about the cruise. I mean, that was, you know,
that's Star Trek.
And since, you know, this episode has no Klingons in it, we figured we'd get the Klingon expert opinion on last week's episode too. So we're definitely doing Star Trek at least a little bit in these 10 opening 15 minutes. But as far as news goes, we didn't really find anything other than Screen Rant copied our. A theory that the baby albino is going to be albino from Deep Space Nine.
Right,
but
right.
Other than that, not really too much going on.
Maybe they got that from you guys.
Hopefully Screen Rant took it from us. You know. But they didn't credit us, so.
They never do.
They never do.
Well, let's get into the actual episode itself. This is a great episode. I really enjoyed myself on this one. I hope you guys did too. This is Star Trek.
What happened?
A lot did happen, yes.
So much happened.
So this is Star Trek Discovery. This episode is an obol for Sharon, and this is Season 2, Episode 4, and it first aired February 7th, 2019. So we open up, and we get number one, finally. She beams aboard, and we're on the Enterprise, and we get to see the food makers there.
And computer didn't bitch at her for ordering a hamburger and fries. It was bitching at Tilly. Maybe it only bitches at cadets.
Yeah, probably.
Well, Tilly was on a dietary regimen.
How do we know number one isn't?
Well, she doesn't seem like the kind of gal who's like, all right, I gotta work off this burger. Tilly's like, I got a goal and I'm gonna eat kale salad. And smoothies.
That's right.
Can I just say it's slightly shallow, I know, but I was loving number one's makeup because it was such a great throwback with that like coral lipstick.
Yeah, they had like the 1960s or early 50s kind of look or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And it made me really happy. but I mean, on the same token, Majel Barrett she leaves big shoes to fill, and so I thought Rebecca Romijn handled herself quite well.
Go ahead, Dave.
Go ahead.
No, I was just hoping we could see more of her.
I hope we see more of her too. My dad actually texted me during the week after the episode. He was asking me, it's like, why did they introduce her just to eat a hamburger?
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt too, and I was really surprised because I was like, "This is a she's a name.
She's
so
a big
she's
name.
Not be coming back." Like,
so my answer to him was, "I'm hoping what happens later on in the season, is that they get the Enterprise working. Something's too big for Discovery to handle, and so number one will take command of the Enterprise while Pike's commanding the Discovery, and they'll do some kind of joint mission together with the Enterprise and Discovery. This is what I'm hoping will happen, because I'm really sad that they didn't start off the season with a joint mission, so maybe they'll end the season with a joint mission. Somehow the Enterprise was fully disabled, even though it flew into view just fine at the end of season one.
Yes, exactly. So, there's a quick mention that Enterprise is having problems with his holographic communication, and Pike orders to rip out the whole comm system because he doesn't like he likes to go old fashioned view screens, and he thinks that holograms are creepy. They look like ghosts.
They look like ghosts.
So.
I feel like this episode and last episode are like retcon central. Like,
yeah, it's like that's the reason why you didn't see it before.
I mean, they are, but also it's also just doesn't make any sense because they also didn't have them next gen, and then they act like they're brand new in Deep Space Nine. I don't know how you can fix that retcon though. I mean, they're trying really hard to fix the retcons, but it's just like it's brand new in Deep Space Nine, guys. Just are you retconning Deep Space Nine out completely? Because that's where you get Section 31 from, so you can't.
Right. Well, going on to Section 31, they have their little quick talk about Spock and how he supposedly, allegedly murdered three of the doctors there on Starbase 5. And number one's looking deeper into the situation. But Starfleet has classified the case. And there has to be more to it. And obviously she doesn't believe Spock did it. So they think there's something else. And she's going to try to investigate more about the Spock situation while they're getting the ship up and running. So pretty cool. Pretty cool. Interesting. Yes, Dave.
Oh, I know. I just really hope that we get more Rebecca Romijn. Why would you cast such a big name and give her like 5 seconds of screen time?
Yeah, no, I think we'll get more of her for sure. Then we jump down to Stamets' lab, and obviously they've captured the fungal parasite from Tilly from last episode, and it's inside the quarantine chamber. And Stamets kind of like they're kind of talking about maybe we should call it something other than May, and because it's just this formless blob, and he's saying
how about June?
June, yeah. Yes. May, June. July.
Sweet August.
That sounds like a southern name for sure.
I was raised in the deep there in the south.
Yes, you were, sir. You and your mint tulips. Anyways, from there, Tilly starts talking aloud why maybe the creature reached out as May, and that maybe she was because she was so awkward at 14 and she was a weird kid and nobody, she didn't believe in herself. People didn't believe in her. And, but maybe May did. And that she took May for granted at that time.
Sounds like me as a child.
I think she sounds like a lot of us.
All I wrote down about this was Tilly quotes weird kid. And I was, because the whole scene, I was just like, I love her so much.
I know.
Right?
I know.
It's me.
I know, right?
Just getting that little, like, you know, that self-awareness. And I just, God damn it, I love her so much.
She's perfect. She is great. And not just that. She embodies that the character embodies so much of all of us when we think back our younger years, or maybe today, as well. So.
Tilly is totally like us in Star Trek.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, you know, she dropped the F-bomb. Oh, that's so fucking cool. It's just like, she is us in Star Trek. She is right. Like the embodiment of the viewer in Star Trek. And that's why Mary Wiseman is amazing. And they better not kill off her character and make her like a ghost thing.
She needs to stay.
She needs to be around.
I feel like at this point, if that was someone's plan, there will be riots.
They would have changed the plan by now with how much everybody loves her.
Oh my God. Yeah. They had to have my favorite.
Unless they do a Game of Thrones and kill her because we like her so much.
You know, rice in the street.
I'm still waiting for Discovery to be Game of Thrones in space.
There was a t-shirt on the cruise that was like a cruise exclusive t-shirt that was Captain Killy's Charm School, and
it's great.
I think it was the first shirt to sell out. Like I walked into that shop, the ship shop for like the cruise, like stuff, the t-shirts, things like that, on like maybe day two or day three, and there were only like three smalls and one extra large women's left. And I grabbed that extra large so fast.
Nice. Like,
if it's too big, I can take my sewing machine to it. That is mine.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, no, she is wonderful, isn't she? And I don't know what it is, but just how she delivers her lines, she just emotes so well. So
yeah.
Very, very cool. Our next scene, we go to the like meeting ready room, and Michael Burns talking about the Red Angel with some of the staff there, and the Federation, I guess, has no matches. And we get Linus again, who he has more scenes. And
I just have Heart Linus on my, like, literally drew a heart and then wrote Linus next to it. I don't even know what this means, like, but apparently I heart Linus.
Apparently you have a thing for Saurians, or you just after the brandy.
Saurian brandy. And they start speculating that this creature may be unique. Maybe it's a mutated or last of a species or an unknown species or something of that nature. Apparently, there's nothing in the Federation records that known anything winged or avian life forms. So that might exclude the Iconians, like I was saying before. So,
and that's when you start to see like the fluctuation in the ship's translators.
Yes.
The Iconians are also supposed to be a long dead race. So,
but still recorded.
I guess maybe, unless they just found them recently in next gen times because they're so ancient. I don't know.
That's a good point.
Or they discover them with all the knowledge that they are getting from the orb.
Maybe they do discover.
It is discovery.
It is called discovery.
God damn it, you're right.
Then we get... it's just been right in front of me.
I quit.
So then we have Commander Nan, who just shows up in the room, and everyone's like surprised to see her.
Yeah.
Where the hell did you come from?
She's using Scotty's transwarp beaming algorithm from the JJ movie. Oh, wait, no, wrong timeline.
Yeah, right.
I still love the little tiny, like, fun moments that they have, like, when they're in that ready room and he's like, I had a cold last week. It sucked. And they all look at him and he's like, well, I have like six nasal cavities or something. Like that was funny. And then everybody
looked
at him.
That's why that guy got snotted on so hard.
What? Yeah.
Oh.
Although really they don't cover their nose, their mouths in the future. That just seems rude.
Yeah. Lieutenant.
I mean, that guy deserved to be sneezed on.
I
mean, he did get smashed by a rock. I mean, did he really deserve the snot too?
Yes, he did.
Yes, he did.
He was a giant asshole flying through space.
He was,
and that asteroid just barely fit.
I do love this though, because like one of the things that they talk about in there's that line about the fact that they've cured just about every disease known to man. But Bones says something like, but we haven't been able to figure out the common cold or whatever.
Right. And yeah, exactly.
So we have this moment of everybody getting like the rhinovirus. And it's just like, oh, and I'm like, oh God, that's the worst.
I know. And then, yeah. So in that scene,
probably is the worst thing they have in the future, as far as common colds go, unless it's like a rare, horrible thing.
Yeah. Well, it's probably still around. So Saru is obviously sick, and he's trying to nurse his drinking some kind of tea or some kind of broth of some sort.
It's salt. Water. It's salt with a little bit of water in it.
Oh, God.
Like we saw in season one. He drinks lots of salt.
So while they're during the meeting, then Pike shows up and he tells them to go to these coordinates at maximum warp, and he tells Saru to, you know, take the rest of the day off. You're not feeling so good. And they go into his ready room, and there's Burnham and Pike start talking, and they basically are saying that they found the warp trail of the shuttle that Spock stole from Starbase 5, and they're going to try to catch up with him. That, you know, they can hopefully find out what's going on with Spock and try to solve this reason why they blamed him for these three murders. So just when they're about to do that, all of a sudden the ship comes into gets dropped out of warp immediately. and they run up to the bridge, and they've said that the ship was pulled out of warp, and they make the comment like a fly in a web, and then Michael points out, and there's a spider.
That's a very spherical shaped spider, Michael.
and Pike, okay.
Pike has his Indiana Jones moment. Spiders are his. I hate spiders.
Spiders. I hate the dim dead of spiders.
Spiders. Why did it have to be spiders?
Yeah.
So that was the beginning part of the teaser, if you want to call it, of the beginning of the show. Then we get into the rest of it, is where they're analyzing the sphere. The sphere is about 500 kilometers in diameter.
That's no moon.
Yes, it's much smaller than the moon. It's even smaller than that giant spherical asteroid Ceres. It's about half the size of that, so or give or take. So, but it's pretty damn large, and they're trying to hail it. They're trying to find out what the sphere is trying to do, but it's not responding. But it's vibrating, and the computer's trying to extrapolate what the sounds might be. And what it's trying to do. But then all of a sudden, they just start speaking in Klingon.
Mm-hmm.
And
we did get a little Klingon this time.
We did. It did.
It started in Klingon, didn't it?
Michael spoke in Klingon.
Not
everyone
that I'm
else
versed.
Something else.
Yeah, I noticed there was some French, but it seemed like they all knew that she's kind of got she's got strawberry blonde hair, half of her head is shaved.
Detmer.
She's got the eyepiece.
Oh, Detmer.
Yeah, she was speaking Klingon, and then the other person was like, why are you speaking Klingon? So, they knew what she was speaking, but they were speaking something else.
No, she was speaking Arabian or something, because she said her console was
Arabic.
The
screen looked Arabian.
Only
Michael spoke Klingon.
Oh.
How did their Klingon stand up, Jen?
I was going to ask.
I was so busy scribbling things down, but it sounded like if memory serves, I remember being pleasantly surprised by Sonequa. I thought she did a delightful job, and the whole scene. They switched languages so rapid fire. That I actually was having trouble keeping up.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, they were switching back and forth, and I do wonder, how well those they did with those kind of speaking different languages. Well, but
they've got a great language coach for all the Klingon in the show, so I imagine they're trained in other dialects to make sure they sound kind of okay.
Absolutely loved this scene because it brought back that moment. Was it last episode? Or the one before where Saru is in a conversation is like, I learned 94 languages.
Yeah. Right.
Telling Tilly that. Yeah.
And I love the fact that this episode, then when he's is in a huff and he's just like, am I the only one who bothered to learn a foreign language?
Right. Exactly.
Yes.
A foreign language. Comedy, no, you literally speak 94 languages.
Right.
You know the important ones, a couple of them. Although, Holly, this scene made me think of you last week when I was complaining that they switched, when they said, I was upset that they said shosh, that they didn't say shosh, that they said mother. And you were just saying, oh, they just are trying to make it so you're not distracted by, not being able to read or not having to read. And I'm like, your logic went right out the window on this episode because they're speaking 20 different languages.
No,
it's close enough.
No, it's not close enough. I said that the reason why they used English was so that it had better impact on you emotionally when she said mother.
It's a good point.
That's what
I'll go with.
No,
that.
But you were saying also it's just distracting because of having to read, not being able to watch the
action. We talked about how the word sounds and how mother would sound in Klingon and how important it is to have a feeling when you hear it. That's what we talked about.
We talked about lots of things.
I mean, that sounds legit to me.
I have a confession to make. So because how my house is set up and where my kids are, you know, sleep in their rooms, I always have subtitles on because modern TV and movies, the sound jumps up and down.
Varies.
Ridiculous. Oh, my God. So they'll have an action scene where things are louder than bombs and then they're talking. It's almost a whisper. And so, like, I just got to just turn it way down because I don't want to wake them up. And I read the, you know, closed caption. That's what I do. I mean, I can hear them talk, but sometimes, you know, it's not. So I do it all the time. So it doesn't bother me anymore. I've come accustomed to it. So
I love the font that they use for the
cool font
on this show.
Yeah, it's a cool font for sure.
I feel like they're doing a better job of, like, when they're shooting and they know they're going to be using subtitles, they know where the shot is, where the subtitles are going to be, so they're not hard to read. Season one, I feel like they had a lot of issues, or especially in the sarcophagus ship, where, like, the subtitle just, like, blended into the texture.
That's a good point. That's important.
And I feel like season two, they've been doing a lot better job of putting the camera in places where the subtitles can still be read easily.
Right. Well, so like we've been saying, it's all this confusion. Everyone's speaking different languages. Their councils are a different language.
The Tower of Babel.
It was hard to follow.
Yes. And Michael Byrne calls on Saru to the bridge. He comes and Pike says, "Welcome to the Tower of Babel." And and then Saru, because he knows these 94 different languages, which is he goes in and he works on the universal translator, which has been infected with a computer virus, and he at least gets it down to, you know, we can start understanding each other again. But unfortunately,
wasn't it isolated just to the bridge though? Like they had to go work their way out into the ship.
Yeah, and they have to go through everything else. So now they have to kind of start working on all the different systems on the ship, and the whole ship is in disarray because of this giant sphere like fireball outside their front of the ship. So so Michael says that there's this virus for the translator, and they're going to go down and try to work on that, and Saru offers to help. And they go in down to the turbo lift and go down to work. Back on the engineering lab, Tilly is their section has been affected by the virus at the moment, and but Pike tells Stamets that they might have to jump out of with the spore drive, so just be ready to go if we need to. But then we get the return of Jet Reno. She's back.
She comes out of nowhere.
I was so excited.
I was so happy.
So
she
excited.
Yeah.
Yes. So we have a great back and forth between Reno and Stamets.
She loves her duct tape.
She does love her duct tape. She does love her traditional warp core engines
and gum.
So fancy. I was like, gum. Oh my God, this is the best.
And then Stamets is trying to make his argument for why spore drives are better.
I could fix that analogy with duct tape too.
Yes.
the allegory and just the like, oh my gosh, just amazing. The great energy debate is what I wrote down. Like,
right.
Holy moly. It's such a great moment.
The ecological ruin of dilithium mining. And she brings up and says, you know, and says, you think you'd run a ship off mushrooms that I pick off my pizza.
It's great.
She also had that great line in this scene about, I'm a gearhead, not a farmer.
Yeah, yeah. I know.
I was like, oh, she's the bones of this show. Like,
yeah, that's
she's exactly. Bones and Scotty all rolled into one.
Rolled into one, yeah.
But another reason Discovery would have been so great if it was post-Voyager, that way this discussion could make sense. The great debate of resources and what's cleaner for the environment, because we know that they don't use spores going forward, so it's kind of a moot debate to have at this point.
Well, we might find out more reason why as we move on a little bit here. But I was going to say it is funny because there was a Next Gen episode where they're having issues because they were going into warp and they're ripping the fabric of space apart. I can't remember.
Well, this Voyager episode where if they use the Omega particle, then warp drive doesn't work anymore. So
But there was a Next Gen episode where they would warp and they were messing up, and the some kind of creatures from subspace were trying to stop them. I can't remember. It's been too long. I have to look back. I just remembered it.
The subspace aliens that cut Riker's penis off.
I don't know if it's that one.
No, I feel like I know what you're talking about.
It wasn't Schisms.
It wasn't Schisms. No, it wasn't that one. No, but it doesn't matter. Let's move on. I can't, if I can't back my references, I should shut up. so anyways, from there, Burnham, Saru are now talking in Russian, apparently. And they isolate the problem, the communication system, and they manage to restore the universal translator back on all decks. And this is when Saru collapses, and she's like, what's going on with you? This is not just a cold. And so she starts dragging him and to sick bay because there's something going on with Saru that's much more than just a cold.
They did a great job with his makeup to make him look sick, even though he's wearing prosthetics, which was so good. They made him whiter, like paler, and they made him all clammy looking. It was great.
Spritzes of water.
he's like dewy, you know.
Baby
like
oil and some water. Get a spray bottle.
Right. So back in the Stamets lab, the engineering lab, we have a power surge. So there's like lightning bolts fired off into there. And Reno's basically the energy could ignite the oxygen and it could cook them like French fries. And so what they decide to do is they have argon xenon mixture gas that uses to help the spores not decay, to preserve the spores. And so they're going to use that as a flood to make a lightning rod so it doesn't kill them. And
the banter is still just as great as it was in the beginning of the show.
Yeah, exactly. So when she does that, when Reno does that, they're all knocked down and there's a great scene.
Tilly's amazing.
Like, hair is completely fried out like Doc Brown from Back to the Future. And she says, this is the second time I've been hit by lightning this week.
And, poor Tilly.
They run over to Reno, she says that she had a strange dream. She was playing drums for Prince. Says there was a beret and some doves or something, she said.
Right.
A lot of 20th century music references in this episode.
Yes.
I would be lost.
Yes, you. I'm sure you were.
I do know who Prince is, so come on.
There you go. And so then they find out that the creature May has escaped the quarantine chambers. The door must be released, and it is attached. And then it attaches itself to Tilly's arm. This scene looked a little contrived for Discovery. How good it looks, because she was just like, "Oh, it's stuck onto me now." It's obviously it was a weird way they filmed it, I thought, but that was just my little take after seeing it for the second time.
We weren't really big fans of the way they animated it the first time we saw it.
Yeah, it's just looks a just a strange animation for that, but she's caught again.
And it totally changes sizes. It was like as big as a couple corpses in a pile, and then all of a sudden it shrank
just
down to like
on her forearm.
Yeah, blow on her forearm.
It's obviously can puss itself out and then bring itself back to be more condensed. So.
You see, at the beginning when it was originally in the chamber, I thought Culber was going to come out of it because he was saying something about how like it holds life and it creates life. I was like, oh, it looks like body size. Maybe Culber could pop out of that.
And it made a hand too. So
yeah,
while she was touching the glass there, so back at sick bay. Going to sick bay, should I say? Burnham's taking Saru to the sick bay, and if they find Pike along the way, and when they get down to the sick bay, basically, Dr. Pollard says that his heart rate's going crazy, spiking adrenaline levels, and increased neural activity, making the pain, said most humans would just fall unconscious because of the pain he's feeling right now.
Help you, superhuman.
Yes, and then his gangula shoots out, and he's seeing
he's
that
he's fine.
Yeah, right. And he's seeing ultraviolet light. So he's seeing flashes of that. And obviously humans can't see ultraviolet light. And
not yet,
but soon.
Soon,
Geordi. And then he brings up that basically Kelpians, have a condition which are terminal, and he believes somehow this sphere has triggered this biological process that Kelpians are, when they get to this time in their life.
Second puberty.
It's time to die, and they go to their predator species on their home world where they're basically eaten. And that's basically the cycle of their life. That's what he claimed.
They like get sucked up into space.
Yes.
Right. Well, we don't know, but yes, they sucked up into somewhere.
Right.
The giant beamed up.
Right.
The Kelpian vacuum. back in engineering lab, Tilly is now in the quarantine chamber, and Stamets is trying to call the bridge, but there's no communication. And this is where Tilly begins to drift in and out of consciousness. Mm-hmm. And she starts going like, well, May doesn't really want to hurt me. Never tried. She was annoying. And sometimes she could be scary, but she doesn't want to hurt me.
She's kind of loopy.
Yeah. She starts getting, yeah. And so Stamets realized that,
she's being doped.
Yeah, May is releasing psilocybin hallucinogens to Tilly, and he says maybe to keep her calm, and then Reno is the one who's actually to keep her from fighting back. So that's a very good question as well. Then we jump back to sickbay, and Burnham is talking that if Saru's believes that the sphere brought upon his death cycle, it could stop the process as well. And then they're talking about how the computers are unreliable and computer control and primary systems are all failing and with the warp core and life support's failing. But if Michael brings out, if the sphere was trying to destroy them, this is just a slow way of doing it. Why would it do that? So, which is an excellent point. But
this scene was just so beautiful. It was so beautiful.
You dug it, huh? Where they're trying to blot out the guy's wound.
But like, I guess I'm talking about the whole scene between Michael and Saru, and just everything about it. The emotion that Doug Jones manages to get through.
Yeah, he really does
through the prosthetic. Yeah,
and that moment where he says, "I've learned multiple languages, but never shared my own." Like.
Right. Yeah. No. It is very. And we get during that conversation too. We get the strange. I can't quite get my head around it. Just like I know Dave, you feel the same way. But the Prime Directive, when the Prime Directive no longer applies to his people, that they could have his records of his personal logs after he's dead. And he asked, Michael to basically, go through it and file it. And, so it's the story's there for anybody who needs
for other Kelpians. Read
that. Yes.
Kelpians for Dummy in Starfleet.
Yes, there you go. My life. But they do come up with an idea of making antibodies to slow the virus of this of the sphere that's basically disabling the ship, but they say it's going to take a while.
Mm-hmm. At first in that scene, I was like, why is Saru bleeding out? He wasn't bleeding out before. Is this some kind of weird disease? And then they kind of cut that he's sitting across from them. I just thought it was shot kind of funny. I was confused because everyone was standing around Saru. Then all of a sudden they're standing around a bleeding person. I'm like, what?
Yes. They're just helping out. They're lending a hand.
Yeah. The captain's also a secondary medic. It's like, might as well get Tom Paris in here.
That's right. We find out that Spock's shuttle is reaching the edge of Discovery's sentry range. So after a while, they won't be able to get a lock on them, and then they won't. The antibodies to the virus that Michael and Saru have done are working, but they're just taking a long time to really kick in. So it's going to take them a long time to actually get the ship. So Pike's worried that they're going to completely lose lose Spock's trail. And so at this point, they're thinking that maybe they can throw up some shields and that if they could do that, they could get away faster. Michael brings out, well, why don't I just go? Because they can't talk to the people down in engineering. So Michael goes down to actually talk to himself. And this is where she finds out from Stamets and Reno that Tilly's, you know, basically trapped with this May parasite stuck to her. It's reattached to her. And then they come up with this idea of using a harmonic resonator to interface with the mycelium network to talk to May. And Burnham.
Gosh, so much is going on.
I know. This goes very fast. And Burnham. Well,
And I just realized you completely passed over the whole thing about the refugee status. Like.
Of.
This whole episode. I think that we.
Of Saru itself.
So much.
And it was like I made a big note about this because it was like we had the big great energy debate and then this whole thing about refugees and I was like, this episode is hitting all the progressive notes.
Yeah.
Like,
right,
it's just right. Like we're gonna smash you in the head with some progressive allegory.
Right, right. Yeah, no, there is a lot going on, and there's a lot of little points to this for sure. So Michael then realizes that this harmonic interface, that maybe this spear is trying to do the same, but using a virus to get to Discovery's computer to start communicating. And she runs up to Saru, who's able to see the ultraviolet lights and seeing and... I guess it's basically these are messages from the sphere, this ultraviolet light, and it's trying to basically download its memories to Discovery. So because it's dying and it wants to give like kind of its last report or whatever last, you know,
words,
last living words. Will and testimony.
Will and testimony. That's go. What I was thinking of.
Exactly. Thank you. So that's a huge revelation. And so we have the whole back in Stamets' labs. They're trying to set up the harmonic resonator, but the signal's too weak. So they're going to have to put an implant, and they're going to have to drill a hole in Tilly's skull, which is horrifying. And
and this one was only rated PG, guys.
So
I didn't even write anything down about this. I think I was traumatized.
Right?
Yes.
Terrifying.
Yeah, so they couldn't – I guess there's no laser scalpel because the doors are all locked and they can't get out.
Yet they do have a med kit.
They do have a med kit.
Which we find out later.
To sterilize the drill bit.
Yeah, but like I don't know. Maybe they got really high ticky-ticky drill bits in the future, but I feel like they should have at least tried to restrain her head. Because even if I'm 100% committed, as soon as that drill touches my temple, I'm moving the fuck away.
Yeah.
Remember, like, she's also being, like, given all sorts of things that relax her by the alien and all the other stuff.
Yeah, that's a good point.
She's also barely sort of conscious, and she is like, what? Favorite song? What are you talking about? You know, so it took her a minute. Although it was almost sort of cruel of him to kind of, like, get her... to wake up a little bit to remember her favorite song, because it seems like being out of it would have been better for a drill to go into your head than to be like, oh, wait, I need to be active.
It was a good distraction, I thought.
She was already distracted. She's high on drugs.
Nah, but distracted by fear and distracted by something that makes you feel kind of euphoric is different.
Well, they do. I mean, this is a little jumping a little forward, but they, yes, since you guys are touching on it, they do sing Bowie's Space Oddity.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty cool. And yeah. So we get a Bowie reference, which is makes me happy. And they that's when he pulls the trigger on the drill and they put the implant in. And then Tilly starts speaking like May. And she says her species called the Joss Sep, and that they were threatened by an alien intruder. And it's funny because Stamets first doesn't get it that they're the alien intruder, and that they were had a destructive presence to their spore drive.
Although I want to say maybe it was the Mira Stamets, because Mira Stamets was the one who was actually destroying the network and everything, because the Charon was the one that was destroying everything. Like, I don't know. I think
she wasn't she from the other universe anyway. That spore.
Yeah,
or
that's an excellent point, Holly. That's an excellent point, Holly. I didn't think about that. Yeah, because when they went through it, that's when that little green speck attached to Tilly. So
it probably is Mira Stamets she's referring to, because he was destroying the network for everyone, because they said the whole universe was going to die if the network died.
Yeah, so that's a different reality.
Yes.
Unless the spores bridge all realities, because they are life.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, these are all excellent points. And we do not have the answers to them.
Nobody knows what the fuck is going on.
What the fuck is happening? yeah, exactly. So, anyway, so that's the message. That's the message that they want to give. And Stamets tells May that, you know, he can fix the problem, but he's got to let Tilly go. And May says she's got other plans for her. Mm-hmm. And when Reno tries to get May off with a plasma torch, and the plasma spreads and just covers Tilly's body completely. So she's in trouble. Yes.
So as soon as she says that, you know, she had other plans for Tilly, it clicked in my head. We may have touched on it. Sometimes we are all talking and it's hard to remember what we actually voiced and what we thought we voiced.
Sure, yeah.
But, so May, the spore, was not talking about the captain of the ship. She was talking about the captain of the network of the spore drive. So she was grooming Tilly to become captain. So her perception of what a captain is not captain of a ship. It's to lead, you know, to run the network, to navigate the network.
Yeah.
So that's, so I think I feel like she just kind of gave away exactly what her plan is. She wants Tilly to basically become Stamets.
Or the next tardigrade.
Yeah.
Who knows? So back on the bridge, I guess they got their shields up and they're locked in place by this stasis field, but they can't seem to break free from that. And Pike is getting pretty antsy, and he's asking to power up the weapons because this sphere looks like it's going to explode, and he's afraid it's going to take them with him. So from there, Saru and Burnham run up and ask Pike to hold his fire because they think that it's trying to communicate them. And they frantically try to explain that this might be its dying, you know, dying words. And we have to trust that it's not trying to destroy us. And we should, you know, let it communicate the way we want it to. And basically, they got 6 minutes before Spock's shuttle leaves the sensor range. So better start talking fast, basically. And the planet's about to explode. This is in between with the Tilly stuff, with the she gets covered with the May parasite. And at the last minute, they're ready to, you know, eject the warp core and all that stuff just to get away. So if the sphere explodes, but at the last minute, just when the sphere does explode, what happens?
Because they finally convince Pike to lower the shields and the message is transmitted, and then they come to a realization of what the fuck just happened.
Right. Well, and then we find out that thing that was locking in place that wouldn't let him escape was actually it protected them because it was reversed then, and it shielded them from the explosion at the last second, just before it explodes.
It pushed them far enough out to where they were not affected.
Right. And then we get this, you know, Saru is basically done, and he's, you know, got to go back to his quarters. And we get a scene.
Such a sad moment.
We get a scene of Burnham taking Saru into the turbo lift
off the bridge, and like everybody's like, "Captain, my captain."
Oh, yeah. My God. Oh my God, yeah.
My captain. Yeah, great. And then we get Saru's quarters, which is quite green, I must say. There's a lot of soil on that ground.
Not as much kelp as I thought there'd be, though.
Yes, not as much. Yeah, there should be more kelp and water in here.
I was going to say, weren't there dwellings on his planet, like, beachy, like, very sandy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the seagull sounds playing in the background. So there's...
machine going all the time.
Just to help him go to sleep. He's always nervous. We get this really heart-wrenching, well-done scene between the two where Saru is basically, this is it, I'm going to die. There's this knife, you got to cut my ganglia off and... and then I'm going
to
die.
Riker, I need you to do the ritual suicide for me.
I know. I was thinking about that episode, too, as well. But but Saru really did believe he was going to die at that very moment. So just when she's about to – they have this great tearjerker of a scene where, she's like, you're my family. This is – isn't there another way? And I kept thinking to myself, too, is like – shouldn't we do some studies on this before we just
like let him die, right?
I don't know. It was just kind of like, this is like just it being a little accepting of a race that they know barely anything about.
But Saru has always been more focused on other, and he mentions it earlier, when he talks about his language, he's always been focused on other cultures and other species that he doesn't really self-reflect very often.
Yes.
So questioning his biological time clock, like, it makes sense that he wouldn't have paid attention to it.
I don't know.
Or to me.
I'd want to know more about it before I was going to die. But maybe he thought it was far off in the future and the sphere kicked it into high gear.
Or that he was gone. I would have thought that since he wasn't on the planet anymore, he wouldn't experience that.
Right.
Because I felt like it was a hoax.
Yes, well, when we do find out but he did make Burnham promise that he'll fix her relationship with Spock, because he regrets that he can't see his sister anymore. So, and just before she takes the blade to cut his ganglia off, it just falls off on its own.
They shrivel up and die.
And dies.
Yeah. Shrivel up and die. Exactly.
She went for his ganglia one other time in this really touching scene, and I just wanted to add this because it was really, really disruptive.
What, that she was about to cut it and then she stopped?
No. Michael's laid up on the couch right now, and so watching it, and like in the middle of it when she starts sobbing, Michael's like, terrible fucking acting, and I'm like, hey,
why did he say that?
I thought
it was great acting.
Pour me away.
Oh my god, I thought that whole scene was gut wrenching.
I did too.
I thought the two of them. I thought Doug Jones and Sinequa Martin Green, this entire episode, were just so on their A game.
Yeah.
Every scene they had was just loaded, and they just pulled it off and were just lovely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I completely agree. But no, when Michael yelled out,
he pulled you out of that,
it for
that
me. I was like, I'm not crying.
Right. I'm not crying. There's nothing in my eyes.
Anyway,
so onions.
Who is it? Who is cutting onions?
Yeah, exactly. So we are back in sick bay, and Dr. Poehler said that Saru's vital signs are returning to normal, and he feels, and Saru says he feels better than he ever felt
before. Powerful.
He feels powerful and
power, unlimited power.
Power.
I just wrote down
living face.
I wrote down Kelpian death is a lie, all caps.
So we know we're gonna have like a free the Kelpian moment.
There'll be
some
a Star
point.
Trek yeah. Insurrection. So we're doing yeah. Search for Spock and Star Trek Insurrection this season.
So and Saru then starts thinking this great balance that I've been told my whole life, my whole civilization believes it is not true.
And, time to break some rules.
Yeah, exactly. And so he's, you know, he's got a lot of things to figure out what he's going to do for that. So a lot of questions there, how they're going to end with that.
You lose your ganglia. It's like your training wheels are coming off.
That's right.
Yeah.
Second scared. Puberty. Because I assume they have to reach. I assume they have to reach a first puberty so they can reach sexual maturity, so they can reproduce, so the eaters of them can eat them. But this must be second puberty.
Nice. So, what does that be puberty?
It's always something with you, David.
I know. Back in the ready room, Pike's listening to the files that's being translated from the sphere. And Michael comes in and he says, this is basically the Dead Sea Scrolls of the universe. It's this old information that could really help us for quite a bit. And it did help him also because just before the death, it was able to track Spock's shuttle. So they know
that
it knew, and they plot a course and they take off. But then he kind of says, you know, don't worry about the Spock thing. You know, keep your distance. And Michael says, I'm going to basically face Spock and try to figure things out with him. And then we're back into Stamets' lab and. We obviously, Tilly is they got Tilly's body out of there, out of the whatever you want to call it. The
I don't think they actually did.
I know. I feel like it was a hoax.
Oh, you think they were
imagining the entire thing?
They imagined that they got her out. I think she was in it the whole time.
Right. That's a good point. Well, they have this whole point where they're. They're all tripping on mushrooms.
Their heads swell and their eyes get big and their voices switch.
You have something on your nose.
Yeah, yeah. It's like they hated each other the entire episode. Now they're like really fascinated with each other.
It was weird.
And then
even if they didn't look like they were in a Snapchat filter, it was
yes,
weird.
Yes, exactly. And then when he injects them because he knows that the May creature is dosing them with psilocybin again. They dose themselves with a med kit to help him wake him up, and then they find out Tilly's gone again. So,
which is why I don't think she ever got out in the first place.
I agree with you, David.
Well, there we go. We're at the end of this episode. Jen, you are our guest. We're going to give you first dibs on your thoughts and takeaways, likes and dislikes of this episode.
Tilly, no!
No, Tilly!
Come back to us!
Come back! That's all I have to say. Yeah, that's definitely how I feel. I definitely feel like this episode was the first episode we had the misogynist and mansplainer get taken out by an asteroid. And then now we have this episode that was like, we're going to talk about how crappy fossil fuels are, and we're going to talk about refugees, and you shouldn't hate refugees. And I was like, yes, I love this show. I'm pretty happy with that. And like I said, Doug Jones, this episode for me was like all about Doug Jones and Sonequa, just killing it in every scene they were in.
Mm-hmm. They have some great scenes. Absolutely. I loved it.
And Jet Reno. God bless Jet Reno. So glad Reno came back.
Yes. Yeah, no, she's a great character. Any other thoughts that you had on it or feelings when you're watching it or takeaways?
I'm super along for the ride on this season. I don't have a lot of speculation happening at this point. I feel like questions are being answered. I'm enjoying some of the ways that they're trying to back themselves out of some of the corners that they may have painted themselves into.
I'm just
along for the ride, and it's flashy and fun, and I'm just having a grand old time with season 2 so far.
Great. Holly, what did you think of this?
I mean, I feel like we kind of talked a lot about moments that I really enjoyed. I think a lot happened, and I think I need to watch it maybe not even one more time, but maybe two more times just to really feel like I absorbed all I was supposed to, you know?
Yeah, a lot happened in this episode.
So much happened.
Yeah, so much happened.
And I feel like I missed things. Not that pieces are missing from the puzzle, but I feel like, you know, just little things were mentioned, you know, like Jen said, we kind of even forgot to mention the whole refugee thing with Saru. Like, little things were just thrown into this episode. So I definitely want to watch it again and see if I can absorb more. I feel like this orb is another anomaly.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, it's that they run into this while they're chasing after Spock. Yeah.
Yep. I'm counting them. We've got four now. So I'm waiting until we reach the seven anomalies, and then we know, like, what the big picture is. So far, we've had one anomaly per episode. So I don't know what that means for next week, but
I don't know. And Holly, we have the theme that you've kept on pointing out is that the theme of family, obviously, yeah. The connection between Michael and Saru's character, where she's like, you know, you're my family. I mean, obviously, she served on the Shinzo with Saru. And so they've known each other for some time. And so this is somebody that she's learned to trust, love, and care for.
And respect. The respect came, you know, I think from Saru, because I think Michael always respected him, but because of the, you know,
Mutiny.
Yeah. he lost that in her, I think. And yeah, I did want to talk about that, and I can't remember what was said earlier, but I didn't want to interrupt about their relationship and how the whole family thing ties in. Yeah, I still think family is really big in this season.
And maybe it's also, you know, obviously Burnham's has her family with Spock and, you know, Sarek and Amanda, but, you know, she's finding family outside, you know, with Saru and the crew that she's serving with.
Yeah, and I know that we're talking about the Obel or of Charon, I think it's Charon. But last episode in Point of Light, did anybody else feel like Amanda was like pissed off at Michael?
Oh, yeah, I thought she was. Yeah, when she found out, she was.
But she didn't actually know, like, Michael didn't actually admit to what she did. So, like, it doesn't matter. It was weird.
It was Michael's fault that their family never got together. Therefore, she's kind of pissed that all of a sudden she's found out something that we can't hang out as a family because you.
I don't know. Sarek's kind of an asshole.
Maybe it's Cybok that was actually doing something wrong.
I want Cybok back so bad.
I want some Cybok too. Although I feel like they've only found one of the anomalies because they did say in the first episode they're spread out over 34,000 light years and they've only visited one far away.
Yeah, no, but I think
they've only visited two because the first episode there was the asteroid one and then there was the planet one. And last week's episode, Holly, you said it was an anomaly, but you said that was something from the past. So that's not one of the seven that popped up.
Yeah, but I think they're displaced throughout time.
And they're markers of some sort. It doesn't mean they're the actual anomalies that Spock plotted on the map, I don't think. I think I get what Holly's saying is I think they're saying that they're really weird situations that would normally run into, but why are they running into it now, you know?
Well, right. I think the angels of like a fourth or fifth dimensional being is like kind of like placing them where they need to be or leading them where they need to be. Because otherwise, it none of this would make sense. Because the things the beings definitely got to be a higher dimensional being to be able to like pull them and get them in the right spot at the exactly the right time.
I think that we're witnessing
the cue.
The cue. I think we're witnessing an ongoing anomaly. I think somebody or something becomes. I mean, you guys know how I feel. Like the Red Angel, and all of these instances, it could be Q. Who knows?
It could be. It's just now dawning on me. It could totally be Q.
So I just feel like being present at all of these things, it kind of just makes me feel it even stronger that somebody is involved with all of these anomalies. And, you know, the Church of New Eden, like, that's from years ago. And, you know, the asteroid planet was, they had been there for, what, 6 months? But they thought the Klingon War was still going. And, like, you know, who knows what they thought time was there. So
The Red Angel brought them to New Eden to save them from the radiation that was going to fall on them.
Right. I'm just saying, like, I think finding Michael in the past, I think that is part of the seven anomalies. I could be wrong. But maybe. It involved the Red Angels and Spock's dreaming, so I don't think I'm wrong.
Obviously, there's some weird shit happening.
How about you, Ash?
Going down for real.
Oh. Just real quick, just if anybody doesn't know, an obol for Sharon is basically the coin that you place in a person's mouth before they die, or a newly deceased person. It's a payment to go across the river Styx for the ferryman to take you to the next world of the dead, Greek mythology. I honestly, you know, I know Dave and Holly, you've known before this season took over. I was so nervous. I was that the writers didn't know what they were doing and they were going to screw this up. I am just loving this whole season. I didn't think I'd fall in love so hard on the season. I like the idea that they're exploring into the unknown and there's like some subterfuge with Spock and Section 31. Obviously there's something going on there. Spock knows something. So obviously they're going to run into Section 31 soon enough and their trails are going to bump into each other. The characters are really becoming developed. I can't say enough good things about this. This is what I want from a Star Trek. While the first season, there was obviously some amazing parts to it, there's a lot of it I thought was fragmented and always sometimes didn't make a lot of sense, or was the story could have been streamlined better. This I love. I just totally love. And I love everybody's parts. There's nobody I hate. There's nobody I want to eject off the ship. You know, so maybe Ash Tyler.
I was going to say Tyler, that.
But he's only showed up on one, so I can handle him. Because I'm not a big fan of Ash Tyler. He's getting
I'm loving that we have a bridge crew and we have names.
Yes.
And they're getting to have personalities.
And speak in different languages.
And, yeah, speak different languages and go on away missions. And, like, we're starting to... That first episode when Pike had them all roll call, I got chills. I was like, yes, let's trek, man. Now we're trekking.
Right. And then in the end of the episode when he's like, you know what? I trust you guys as a team. Like, I don't know. You're right. I like it.
Every time I sit down and watch, I'm like, oh, this is going to be really good. And when after it starts kicking in, like the first, like whatever, 5-6 minutes or something like that, like this is really, really good. This isn't just like a little good. This is really good. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm excited for too. Cause it's like, obviously there's a well thought out script so far, everything it's kind of like adding up and we're following a mystery and like Jen said, we're kind of like going along for this ride. We don't know where it's going to take us, but you know, it's really damn interesting. And I feel like this is where Trek should be. This is really cool stuff. Dave, how about yourself?
The Star Trek Discovery Season 2 has been definitely leaps and heads and shoulders above Season 1. Although, I think this is probably my least favorite episode of the season so far.
It's a lot packed into it, for sure.
I mean, it's not that they've packed a lot into it. It's just like all the parts with Saru and Michael for me just slowed the show down immensely.
Really?
Yeah, their acting was good, but like I don't know if it's the lines or like just not me not believing that they were going to go through with killing him. It just felt like a long waste of time for me. Like, I guess I get too meta into the show, into the show dynamics, into like the casting and everything. I didn't think they would. Like, they're not going to be ballsy enough to kill off Saru. And just kind of like the episode where it was really Saru heavy last season. It just like I like Doug Jones. I like the character, but when the episode focuses on him a lot, it kind of drags for me. And this episode did for me as well. Because I mean, I just like if they were to kill him, I would have liked the scenes a lot better. Because then I'm like, oh, they're gonna make it be more like Game of Thronesy, a little bit more ballsy, like actually killing off characters. But I didn't think they were actually gonna do that. So I just felt like all the time was a little bit of a waste, and they could have like.
Can I interject something?
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, but don't you think that this is like a huge revelation for the Kelpians that this is like. Wait, we've been told a lie. Our whole society is based on a lie.
Yeah.
Of course it's based on a lie. And I think it's going to make Saru better, but they could have gotten to that point without as much or dragging out the melodrama as long as they did. I mean, you could have shortened the scenes a little bit, I think, if they weren't going to kill him. And I'm surprised you're on board for this, Aaron, because this means more Prime Directive breaking.
Well, no, the Prime Directive thing doesn't make any sense. I don't understand why Giorgio goes down to the planet and picks up Saru. That doesn't make any sense to me.
And then they're going to go back and just tell them all it's a lie. They're going to destroy the society.
Well, I mean, we don't 100% know that that's what's going to happen. But I mean, we're assuming.
I'm assuming Saru's going to go rogue.
It's probably going to happen because we have heard confirmation that they are going back to Saru's place later this season. We do know that because of the short track. Otherwise, I don't see them spending all the money on all the prosthetics for like a 5-minute episode. So, I mean, it makes sense that they would be going back because that's so far that's the only short track that's actually tied in to anything. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like it could be interesting. Like, it sounds like they are going to stage their own like Star Trek Insurrection in this season as well. Which, I mean, it'll be cool, and it's cool that it'll be interesting to see how Saru goes forward. So, I mean, like, I don't have any issue with like the acting. I thought the acting was good. I just feel like they just dragged the scenes a little bit long.
Mm-hmm. Something you just said made me want to voice something.
Yeah, go ahead.
I did know. You know how Saru was like, I feel different.
Yeah,
I feel like. I'm not saying he's going to, you know, Aaron, you said he's going to go rogue. I don't know that he's going to change completely, but, like, being fearless will, like, definitely alters your decision-making and your rationalizing and a lot of stuff. But I don't know if it was foreshadowing how heavy the episode was on his friendship with Michael, but if he does change, like, it's going to be drastic because it's going to affect not only him, but it's going to affect Michael and their friendship and their, you know, their not kinship, well, kind of kinship, but do you know what I mean? Like, it could be foreshadowing that now that he's going to be a completely different person, that might go away.
Maybe.
I was actually thinking about the, because when you were talking, I was thinking about the crystalline stock that they run into in season one, how he basically gets
and he goes crazy
and he starts like kicking Ash Tyler around and stuff like that and beating him up.
It was Michael. Ash Tyler got
he kicked Michael in the stomach
after the ass kicking of Michael. Because he got beamed, I think, by the aliens, by the Povans.
Right.
They brought him there to try to talk some sense into him.
But I mean, but he got drunk on his own non fearfulness. So
yeah,
Holly, yeah. You might bring up a good point that maybe he'll get a little bit too drunk on his own cockiness. Mm-hmm. So maybe Dave could be right on second adolescence. Maybe this is when you know as a boy growing up, becoming a man, you get real cocky.
Maybe that's why they're removed from the planet.
Hey now.
Hey now. You're an all-star. Get your game on. Go play.
Drop your ganglia.
they send the boys off because they're getting too cocky. Get out of here.
Got all the hair growing. Get out of here.
Get your, yeah.
The like we said earlier, the retconning thing is like, it's like they're trying, but it's a little bit futile. I really hope they don't close the network like Stamets was saying. Like, I don't know how Stamets would have all that power to close the network forever, because I'm still banking on Section 31 taking that technology and using it in Deep Space Nine as how, like, Sloan gets around so easy. Just miniaturize the spore jumping technology and use, like, a real-life microscopic tardigrade. That would be pretty awesome. And that way, if it is really, if the jumps really are damaging the network, you know, Stamets will like, oh, we'll tell Starfleet and Starfleet will turn it off and Sections are doing, it'll keep it running for their needs.
Yeah.
No, but I think those are all valid points. I mean, Holly brought up that maybe this is Stamets from the Mirror Universe. It has nothing to do with the Prime Stamets.
I'm hoping.
But also that's what I thought. Maybe, you know, this is where Stamets, you know, closed the door on his research because he realized that they're just, you know, fucking up their world.
Well, I'm glad Section 31's in this season, so maybe they'll just take it and then the rest of Starfleet doesn't know anything about it, which will be great.
We'll take that. Thank
we'll
you.
Take the technology. We'll fix it. We'll make it better and smaller.
I just wanted to say, I don't know if I misunderstood, but I don't mean that I think that this Stamets is Mirror Universe Stamets. I think that the spore.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry if I misspoke. That's what I took from what you were saying.
Okay, I was just like, wait, I did not say that.
That's not what I meant.
But I mean, overall, like, I did like the very TOS-y thing. Some weird thing in space. It stopped us. We got to figure out a problem. That was great. I loved the Tilly, Stamets, and Jet Reno stuff in engineering. That was great. Although I do think it's a really strange ship design to have the warp drive only accessible from the spore room. It seemed like a huge design flaw to not be able to access engineering from anywhere else.
Right. One door.
Since they're two separate engineering sections. Or they should be two separate engineering. One should be for the warp core, and one should be for whatever. And Jet Reno said she was sent over by the main engineer, too.
Yeah. Right. Like,
what's going on?
I mean, every area has its specific thing. Like, you can't just beam into any place on the ship. You always beam to the same spot. So, I mean, the spore being in one spot. I guess I never thought it was a problem.
Well, I mean, just usually you'd build a ship if there's two separate engineering rooms that do two separate engineering things. Spore drive is a very separate engineering from regular warp drive. They don't work the same, so they wouldn't necessarily need to be the same part of the ship. And to have the main engineering accessible only through the spore room seems like the spore drive room seems very bad flaw.
But it is still like new to them. Like, they didn't know this was even going to work. So, I mean,
it was a science ship.
Let's not design it in a way that makes sense. It's a science ship. It's fine. Scientific method. We'll get it right in the next one.
Yeah. Well,
that's why the other ship, the Glenn, didn't work out. This is why we don't see any more designs of the Discovery after this. Nope. I don't know. Well, anyways, I don't know. There's always little small hiccups that you can say, you know, for any episode, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this season's definitely a huge improvement, and I'm definitely still excited to see what's going forward. Just personally, I'm not as high on this episode as the rest of you guys, unfortunately.
Aww.
I did enjoy it, but I'm
sure. You need some more of them old thingies.
I need some of the mushrooms that Stamets and Jet had. That'd be great.
I would like to get my hands on those mushrooms, yeah.
I would not. But I'll hang out outside the glass while you guys enjoy.
Yeah, man. It's when you come back up, we're just gonna do we're just gonna do balls with you, and you'll I'll be like these it. Fucking assholes.
You and Kaylee can film it together.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Oh my god.
All right, Jen. Well, let everyone know where they can find you online and any conventions you'll be coming up to, so they can go say hi.
KlingonPopWarrior.com is always a great place to check. I'm also on Facebook.com/KlingonPopWarrior. And I'm on Twitter @KlingonPop. Right now, things are a little quiet for me. I'm going to be at a convention again next weekend, but I get to actually just enjoy it as an attendee. I don't have anything on. I know I have no Klingon obligations, so I'm leaving the Klingon at home, and I'm going to bust out some of my other cosplay.
Nice.
That I don't normally get to wear, and instead, so yeah, I'll be at Capricorn here in the Chicago area, and there's free comic book day where our local CAG ship is working on an event for that. And I may be doing a performance for that at the libraries in the area. So, and I'm really, 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 really hoping I can get my butt up to Ontario again this year. I'm working on trying to get something there, either at ThunderCon over in Thunder Bay or because the Timmins Klingons are just so much fun. I don't know that I'll end up back up in Timmins, but we are talking about making sure something tries to happen again this year. So possibly Toronto or something like that. So
very cool.
Yeah, Toronto's not far away from us.
Yeah, there's a hop, skip, and a jump.
It's true. Well, and if I ever get my butt out to visit my mother-in-law in Rochester,
we'll have to get a drink sometime.
Well, you know, maybe me and Dave will drive out to Rochester and hang out for an hour or two with you. That'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Well, the show you can find online at Synthaholics.com. You can join the Facebook group at Facebook.com/group/Synthaholics. You can email us at Synthaholics.com. Our music is provided by Warp 11 and Dave Wilkes. The show online, you can find us on Twitter at Synthaholic Duo. I'm at David_J_Duncan. Aaron's at Blackbird2004. Holly's at Lunar Thistle. And Holly has a website she'd like to share with you.
I'm at hollymichellev.wixsite.com/voiceover.
Nice. Very cool. And after you check that out, please go to Apple iTunes, rate, review us there. Give us 5 stars. It would be very nice. And leave a nice comment. It helps people see us more. Also, if you can, go to Patreon.com/Synthaholics and leave a buck or more if you can. Help the Synthaholics get our Synthahol so we can keep getting drunk.
And keep the websites running.
Keep the websites running, basically, and replace equipment and other BS like that. You know, technical end that Dave has to worry about all the time. So if you could do that, we appreciate it. And as always, if you can, let people know about the podcast. Share the link. Let your coworkers know, your family knows, your friend know. You know, if they're into podcasts, let them know. And
just walk up and say, Nuknech.
Nuknech. Exactly.
Oh, new neck, motherfucker.
Yeah. Oh, man. Never, ever will I live that moment down.
You told us about it. It was fantastic. All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Thank you, Jen, for joining us. It was great having you back.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Especially after a long con day.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, it's been a long con weekend. I'm looking forward to going to bed.
Yeah. Sounds good. Well, thank you all for joining
us. Take those feet up.
Sure.
It was awesome meeting you, Jen.
Nice to talk to you, Holly.
Yeah. Well, everyone, I hope it happens more, actually.
Yeah, I'll have to get you back. We've got more Discovery episodes, so we'll probably have you back a little bit later in the season. That'd be great. Maybe on an actual Klingon episode.
Get that Klingon episode. Maybe you know there's going to be more of those. Like, right. They're not going to leave us hanging on that after that last one.
Oh, they might. Who knows?
I don't know. Didn't they say that the first season was like all Klingon war and then it wasn't?
Who knows? So, hopefully we'll see them sooner or later. But thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all. Side of Mars. Well, McCoy, my boy, come mix me a drink. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink. And we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had. Woo. Oh, so I don't know if Kaylee, I'm not. Holly, did you hear that story? The nuke neck motherfucker. Did you hear that story? Whenever we had Jen on,
the what?
That was pretty great.
Oh, God.
The nuke neck motherfucker. Because I was referencing a story Jen told us the first time we had her on.
Yeah, no, I was completely lost. I was like, okay.
Oh my God.
Do tell. Well, wait. You're exhausted. Do you want to tell? I won't force you.
It's a pretty short story. Okay. It was the Star Trek 50th anniversary year, and it was the Chicago Creation Entertainment Star Trek convention. And it was the night before the con started, and everybody was at the drinking at the bar, and a whole bunch of the Star Trek actors were also hanging out and having drinks in the hotel bar. And I was sitting at the bar with a friend of mine, and I was about two or three cocktails in. And I normally drink beer. I don't drink hard liquor. So all of a sudden, one of my friends comes running up to me and she's like, Jen, Robert O'Reilly wants to meet you. He wants to meet the girl who sings in Klingon. And I am drunk. I get up off my bar stool and I'm like, ooh, I am drunk. And so I start walking up and he turns and he smiles and he's like, Nuke Nack. And I, drunk me, is just like, Nuke Nack, motherfucker. And he starts, he busts out laughing. He gives me a huge hug. He humors me. He takes a picture with me. Me and my potty mouth just, Nuke Nack, motherfucker.
That's hilarious.
So drunk.
Do you still have the picture? Have you posted on the Facebook group, the Nuke Nack, motherfucker group?
I haven't, but I mean, the picture is on Facebook somewhere, because I'd have to go digging for it.
Gotcha. That's a great story. I like the, I love the Nuke motherfucker story.
Both of our faces are a little red. We've both clearly been drinking, so.
That's awesome.
I'm just glad he laughed. That's
I've said a couple of awful things while intoxicated on this show, so I get it.
we all make our mistakes, that's for sure. Well, Jen, thanks so much for dropping by and talking to us, and
absolutely
look forward to talking to you again. But definitely go get some rest.
Yes. Thank you.
I'll get with you on other episodes soon.
Awesome.
All right.
Cool. All right. Well, I'll talk to y'all soon.
All right. Good night, take care, Jen.
Good night.
Good night.
Nighty night.
Bye.
Bye.